I Hate the News is the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. The week of June 18th, 2024, Maryland Governor Wes Moore pardons 175,000 criminal convictions for marijuana and paraphernalia possession. Montgomery County Board of Education passes its annual budget, withdrawing threats to cut or furlough staff. Washington, D.C. Council passes its own education budget, restoring the mayor's cuts. New noise pollution signs go up in downtown Silver Spring, but enforcement remains unclear. And the first of this summer's heat waves is coming this week.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program. If your goal is to make a meaningful impact with a career in local, state, or federal government, discover what this degree can do for you. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society functioning precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from Rockville singer-songwriter Andrew Glore and his band Drew Pictures. Maryland Governor Wes Moore has pardoned convictions for marijuana and paraphernalia possession from before cannabis legalization in the state, affecting tens of thousands of people, and is among the largest acts of clemency in American history.
This morning, with deep pride and soberness, I will pardon over 175,000 convictions.
Individuals still need to go through a process to expunge their criminal convictions from the record. Maryland Legal Aid is running expungement clinics. Best place to start is their website, mdlab.org. Montgomery County Board of Education announced that MCPS alumni and Stafford County Public Schools Superintendent Thomas Taylor will be the new MCPS Superintendent starting July 1st. Taylor goes from a school district with 30,000 students, 33 schools, and $500 million in budget to 160,000 students, 211 schools, and $3 billion in budget. Taylor's appointment ends a five-year period during which time the school board sought to put in place a Black or Latino superintendent in the hope that it would help address the achievement gap between Latino and Black students on the one hand and white and Asian students on the other. The new superintendent faces low morale internally, lack of trust externally, rising truancy, achievement gap, and now budget battles. After much debate that included threats of teacher layoffs and furloughs, Montgomery County Board of Education passed an adjusted budget that found a way not to have to do either. Class sizes will still increase. Some teachers will be involuntarily transferred to schools and positions they may not want. Pre-K expansion is delayed. Students in English as second language classes will be mainstreamed quicker. And the Virtual Academy, the online program that served about 800 students, will now be closed despite the protests.
Dr. Feller, you said you care about our...
Please, we need to continue with our meeting. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you.
Excuse me, please. We need to continue with our meeting.
Our kids count.
appreciate your cooperation, families.
At the board meeting June 11th, Shebra Evans captured the mood.
I have the worst taste in my mouth ever. And as someone who has campaigned from the very beginning on equity, and this is not a fault of ours, but the decisions that we made, pre-K, staff development, just everything, it just makes me not feel good about this. And my colleagues have heard me say this. Dr. Felder has heard me say this. But publicly, you have not heard me say that this is not a budget that makes me happy at all. There are no winners. There are no winners in this budget, particularly for our students. And so I'll give my vote. I will make my decision before we raise our hand. But I'm not happy with how we have to do this.
Please put your hands up so I can see the vote. Ms. Yang, Ms. Rivetta Oven, Ms. Wolf, myself, Ms. Harris, Ms. Modrowski, Mrs. Evans. That's unanimous with those present.
In Washington, D.C., the D.C. Council also passed a new education budget, restoring cuts proposed by Mayor Muriel Bowser. Most of the cuts the mayor had suggested affected schools in wards 7 and 8, the poorest parts of the city, where student population is predominantly black and brown, and many students are considered to be at risk. And amazingly, they were able to find the money for schools by cutting the DCPS central office budget. I asked Erica Robertson of the DC Fiscal Policy Institute how the DC Council did this.
They also did put extra emphasis on our schools with a large number of at-risk students, so those schools in Ward 7 and 8. And they did that by, you know, adding an additional permanent teacher to every elementary school in Ward 7 and 8.
Now, the truancy issue has been a big problem in DCPS, as well as, I think, across the country. What specifically was done there?
In the last version of the budget that was voted on June 12th, the council got money for an additional metro stop safe passage program. So essentially what that is that they have workers who help students get to and from school safely. So that was about $300,000, I believe, to expand the safe passage program to that area. And that's actually the Brooklyn Metro Station, which is in Ward 5.
And there is some housing vouchers now?
You know, markups from the chairman with the committees, and Robert White is actually the council member who has the housing committee. And so he was able to find money within his own committee to get more vouchers.
So DCPS is not alone in these issues that it faces. How does it compare regionally or even nationally?
A lot of it boils down to, you know, a couple of common threads, right? I think inflation, the cost of labor is, you know, something that's increasing, as well as the loss of, you know, our pandemic recovery funds. The ESSER money is running out in September. And so all of the districts are kind of facing this similar issue, right? Where they're like, we had all this money and we were like trying to figure out what to do with it. And now we don't have that money. And we're also like, our local budgets are tight. So like, we're kind of like just fighting to see how we can really fund the things that we have funded over the past 4 years, and keeping those things that we felt, you know, were really efficient and really helping students thrive.
Erica Robertson, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Last week, downtown Silver Spring saw new blue colored decibel signs. The signs limit noise generation to 65 decibels, which is the sound of a normal conversation, and would make shouting and loudspeakers illegal. There have been several complaints about aggressive and loud anti-LGBTQ street preachers in and around the Veterans Plaza. Here is Councilmember Kate Stewart.
The plan for this summer is, over the next month or so, we are doing engagement and education. In about a month or later in the summer, if people are violating that, then they will be given a warning. If someone is continually violating after the warning, they will be given a citation. It will be led by our Department of Environmental Protection because that falls under their department in our ordinance. If there occur, because that's life, any type of incidents, our police department will be available to provide assistance to our Department of Environmental Protection.
We're not required in this country to carry ID. So if somebody says, I don't have an ID, I'm not going to give you my name. What is the recourse you have?
I think the recourse, and again, we in any type of situation like that, is we need to work with the individuals who are there. And if they're, you know, lots of times those folks are handing out materials that have addresses on them. They're with different organizations. And if that occurs repeatedly, I think we need to think about under the law what is feasible for us to do.
So what is under the law feasible for you to do?
We will have to talk to the attorneys over the time when we get closer to enforcement about what are we going to do if someone repeatedly breaks the ordinance and refuses to provide IDs and other information. What do we want to instruct? Like, we have a month before that or more than that, that is happening, and those conversations are happening.
What about other locations? So one particular location that has come up is the Randolph Road, Beers Mill, crossing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a countywide. I mean, the ordinance covers the entire county.
But there are no signs at Randolph and Beers Mill right, as of now.
Don't know if the signs were put up there. That's outside my district. And
you don't have any First Amendment concerns?
No, because people can still be there and can share their opinions. They just need to do it at a decibel level that falls within our ordinance and is not completely disrupting the area for everyone else.
So there's some criticism that only this is aimed at the preachers, particularly the anti-LGBTQ speakers.
This is absolutely nothing to do about content. This is about, again, people, everyone in our community being able to enjoy our public spaces. And right now, that is not possible.
We are on the verge of the first summer heat wave. Here is Mara Parker of the Montgomery County Office of Emergency Management.
We have two types of alert standards that we look at. One is an extreme heat alert, formerly called the hyperthermia alert, which is issued by the county when a forecast temperature or the heat index, which is an important distinction in the county, is going to be at least 95 degrees or higher and has the potential to create hazardous situations for residents like heat stroke and heat exhaustion. And the next level is a heat emergency alert, which for the county means that dangerous conditions are present, which include having actual temperatures or a heat index reaching 105 degrees or more for a period of at least 2 days, and also includes two other factors, or can include two other factors. If the nighttime temperature is not forecast to dip below 75 degrees, that's another factor that can contribute to, say, upping an extreme emergency or a heat emergency alert, even if it is only lasting 1 day. And the final rationale for doing that would be if there were an expectation of large-scale thunderstorms or power outages. A heat emergency alert also triggers a number of other actions within county government to take extra steps. First, the county has long had a policy of using our recreation centers, libraries, aquatic centers with pools as cooling centers. Sometimes the county has even been known to make the county pools free, for example. But we have a holiday coming up on Wednesday. The county is celebrating Juneteenth, and some facilities normally will be closed. And it's possible that the county might reconsider closing some facilities if we indeed trigger the heat emergency alert on that day. The Department of Animal Services, for example, will be more aggressive in redoing outreach about pet safety and letting people know that there If they leave their animal out during a heat emergency, it's actually a violation of county law. Department of Health and Human Services, they will touch base with nursing homes. They also reach out to those who provide services for the unhoused in the county. This week, we're really dancing on the edge of whether or not we're going to meet that threshold. And part of the reason is, folks may have noticed, we're having a little bit of a drought right now. The effects of this heat dome that's a little different than the type of heat wave we normally have is it's keeping a lot of that extreme weather at bay that might raise our humidity with a lot of drenching rain. We do anticipate that the humidity is going to climb throughout the week. And so I think our hottest days this week, as far as we know, are going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And those are the days where we may be looking, we may be dancing on the edge. One of the most important things that we know from public health providers is that for those who work outdoors and those whose body, core body temperature is invariably going to get very hot during the day, the most important thing they can do for their health is make sure that they cool their core body temperature down during the evening. So one thing we recommend, especially for those who don't have air conditioning, is that they keep the shades down in their home during the daytime, that they consider not using their ovens and stoves. So think now about preparing cold items for dinner for the week so that you're not heating your place up. And really consider water. Even sitting in a bathtub of cool water or taking a cool shower is going to be much more effective at lowering your core body temperature than lying in front of a fan.
Mara Parker, thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Montgomery County Planning Board unanimously recommended to the County Council more dense building, such as duplexes, triplexes, and quadplexes in previously single-family zoned areas. Next, the County Council will look at whether to accept, change, or reject the recommendation. If they make any change, they'd need to pass new zoning text amendments for the change to go into effect. The move is expected to make housing more affordable by allowing the same land to have more units. That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview this Friday. iHeart Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer, Adama Gay, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Rockville singer-songwriter Andrew Glore and his band Drew Pictures. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. See you next time. My back against the wall at Minneapolis, St. Paul.